The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve?
Uh-huh.
Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Friday. It is the 18th day of July, 2014. Let's take a quick look at the numbers. The Dow is up 97 points. The S&P is up 14. The NASDAQ is up 48. Gold is down $8.80. Crude is off by 8 cents a barrel. Those are the numbers. And again today, much like yesterday, these numbers, they're numbers. And in light of this tragedy and the human lives that were lost, it's somehow difficult to focus on the numbers. They seem to lose their importance in the face of such a tragedy, senseless loss of life, because we can't get along, because we want power, because we want money, because we want oil. Again, what an incredible tragedy. But such is the plight of man. Since the garden, so I have read. However, life does go on no matter, you know, we all remember. Everyone in this audience is old enough to remember September 11th. My son, he doesn't remember it. That was the year he was born. He'll never know what it felt like to be awake that morning to be standing watching the TV, horrified, terrified, not sure what to do because no one in America, on American soil, had ever dealt with anything like that. But yet there are parts of the world where what we saw on 9/11, it's just another day at the office for Israel, Palestine, you know. Well, yeah, yeah. We're blessed people living in a blessed land. And I know that we have listeners that tune into this radio program from around the world, some from Israel. We have partners in Israel. So our prayers are with everyone in the Ukraine, with all of the families of all the people who were lost there. And, you know, there were Britons and Americans. And I read this morning 100 people from the World Health Organization were on the manifest, on that plane. The President of the United States is speaking right now to the nation, to the world, about the incident and about the role America will play. He, of course, looking for a diplomatic solution, and I guess that's appropriate. Until we know for sure who pulled the trigger, and then what's the proper answer and the proper response? It's a big question. I'm glad I'm not the president. Nobody asked me to be, and I'm certainly glad I didn't wake up and find myself with that job title. It's a weighty decision. You know, there's an article out today, and we're going to touch on that article later in the show. Many are saying the president has clunked out as his tenure comes to an end, his term. He's not really on the job, some would say, you know. But this is not a left versus right kind of an argument. This is everybody kind of agreeing that we have a problem back at the House, the White House. And so we'll talk about that a little later in the show. If you're tuning in today for the very first time, I'd like to extend a special welcome to you. You should be able to see a chart that I have up on the big screen. If you can't see the chart, just go to the homepage at cfrn.net. On the right-hand side of the page, click the big microphone, follow the instructions. That will get you logged in. You'll be able to see the charts as well as participate in the discussion. You'll have access to a little chat box. If you have a question, a comment, you'd like us to take a look at a particular market, just type it into the little chat box there, and we'll be happy to have you as a part of the show. We enjoy it very much when you participate and share what you're thinking, what you're doing, what you're trading. We're as interested in you as you are in the markets. So there. Now, the chart I have up today, it's normally an hourly chart of the S&P 500 E-mini futures, and it is a chart of the S&P 500 E-mini futures, but this one comes to us from the Thomas Observatory. Those of you that were tuned in yesterday at the end of the show, one of our listeners, Thomas, said, isn't there sort of an oddly misshapen head and shoulders pattern on the hourly chart? And I thought he was talking about the daily chart, and I couldn't find it. We finally nailed it down, and I drew some circles, shoulder, shoulder, head, and we finally got into agreement. Okay, it took us a few minutes. If you were here, you saw me struggle, but we finally figured it out. And his point was this, that we had a weekly trading zone at 59.60. And if this was the shoulder, and this was the shoulder, and this was the head, would that weekly trading zone not, in fact, be the neckline? And we decided that, why, yes. Yes, it would. His question was, if we then took a measured move from the top of the head down to the neck, and then we went from the neck down, that's how you do that. He asked if we had a weekly trading zone down in this area, 1943. The answer was no, we don't. But what we did have was one of those LTP numbers, those longer-term projection numbers that I gave out the first set two Sundays ago. There was three numbers, and then I gave out an additional set this past Sunday. All projections on the downside. Okay, I don't have a projection yet using that formula on the upside. As soon as I do, I'm going to share it with you. But for now, everything is to the downside. Doesn't mean we'll necessarily go down and connect with every one of those numbers. But if we get into those areas, those numbers will be like a magnet. And you should, if you get in the neighborhood, you should expect price to... You okay, buddy?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay. I'm just curious. It sounded like a hamster that fell off his wheel there or something. It was a little...
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It rubbed against my beard. Let me just shut off my mic.
No, you're okay.
Okay.
Was that really your beard?
Uh-huh.
I guess you need to shave. I really need to shave. Yeah, yes, I do. Okay. So do you have somewhere that you need to dash off to?
Well, the kids are home, so.
I mean, if you want to go ahead and do the recap, go ahead.
No, I can do the recap. I got other stuff that I want to get out with some emails and stuff. So I'll do the recap. If you
all right. Go right ahead.
All right. Can bring it over here. And monitor 3. And a spreadsheet. And there we go. All right. Well, I will start the recording. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Today is Friday, the 18th day of July, 2014. Let me get the results. Okay. The results for today were plus 12 ticks on the soybeans, were plus 7 ticks on the Russell, plus 4 ticks on crude oil, and minus 16 ticks on gold. All right. It took us 115 minutes and 15 trades to get to our goal for the day, which was $100 a contract. All right. And we took a total of 15 trades today. What that means is my last trade was the one that got us to $100 a contract. We're back and forth and back and forth all day today. So far in the month, we are up $5,132.50 a contract. $5,132.50 per contract. That's on 13 trading days. We have, if you apply an $8 commission to every trade we've taken, you would be up a net of $3,372.50. If you apply a $5 commission to every trade we've taken, you'd be up a net of $4,032.50. Okay? $3,372.50 net. Or 40-32-50 net. Those are net numbers after commissions and fees and all that stuff. And you know, I use an $8 commission. I use an $8 commission because nobody should be paying that. That's a very high number. So you should be somewhere in between there. Okay? So 51-32-50 on the month. 13 trading days, 2 hours a day with one contract. All right? Let me get rid of that and I'll show you guys how to take the free trial. Hang on a second. Here it is. All right. If you have not taken the free trial with us, you just need to go to CFRN.net. Right in here, put in your name, put in your email address, click register for a free trial. Once you click register for a free trial, you'll be sent a confirmation link. When you get that confirmation link, you need to click on it, okay, because we don't know you took the free trial until you click on that link. Once you click on the link, we'll send you all the information you need to become a partner. That will include couple of emails. One will have all the stuff to get into the live trading room, to download the charting platform, and all that stuff. The passwords, videos about all the indicators, all that stuff is going to be in the first email that you get that says, like, welcome, Bob, to CFRN. The next one is going to say details for setting up DT Pro workspace or a Ninja workspace. Then it says, please watch this video. I mean, it actually says, please watch the video. So, really, watch the video if you can. Okay. Let me just check something here. Yeah, okay, because if you watch the video, you'll be up to speed with what we're going to be doing in the live trading room, or at least you'll be more up to speed with what we're going to be doing in the live trading room on the first day. You won't be so overwhelmed. Okay? Now, that was all that. Now let me get into the trades that we took today. Okay. The trades that we took today. We'll start out with crude oil. Okay. Start with the crude. We'll start with the crude. Alright. It is right here. We took quite a few trades on crude this morning. Then we ended up a little bit on crude, but we were back and forth all morning, back and forth on the crude. All right, our first trade on crude was right in here. We took a short trade. We ended up taking a break even on that one. The next opportunity was right over here, but I really wanted to see it close up above there before, so it would be trending before we took that trade. So it finally closed up above there, and I missed the trade right here. I missed that momentum trade. I did jump in on a trade right in here, and I got a little bit of profit on that. I believe I got 5 ticks profit on that one. All right, I missed this one, and then I got stopped out on this one. Down closed below the trend line there. I got stopped out for -8 ticks. So at that point, I was -3. I got a couple ticks profit on this one, put me back at -1, and then I got a 4 ticks profit on this one right here that put me at +3. My final trade of the day was this one right here. I guess it wasn't 125 minutes, it was 122 minutes, but either way. My final trade of the day was this one right here. I just took the 1 tick on this one to get the goal for the day and finish up. Since then, let's see, there was a short trade right in here. At the end of the live trading room, there was a short trade right in there. And there was another one right here during the break. Let's see, there was one more right over here, and there's one right now. This up close right here is a long trade. Okay. That is a long trade on crude oil. Alright. It would be the up close off the BBC with bullish divergence and a blue cycle down here. Okay. So I just got long at 102.97. Alright. I'm just gonna slide that off to the side and that's it. So on crude, we ended the morning at +4 ticks. +4 ticks on crude. The next one that we're going to do will be the Russell. Okay. On the Russell today, we battled on the Russell too. It was just a difficult day because the ES and the Russell were back and forth on weekly trading zones for a good part of the morning. Okay. The Russell looks like it was awesome right here. I got long here on the first trade, I got long here on the Russell, and ended up getting 1 tick profit on that. I missed this short trade over here, that would have been a break-even trade for me anyway. But I missed this long trade, I missed this long trade. And then finally I got into a long trade way over here, and it stopped me out. That put me at -7 ticks. Then I got into a short trade right here, that also stopped me out. And I should have had my stop at break-even on that one, it was a momentum trade. And it did go down some, but I just wasn't fast enough getting myself to break even. But anyway, after this trade, we're -15 ticks. I missed that trade right there, and then I grabbed 8 ticks profit on this one. That put us back to -7. Right over here, we didn't take this because the ES was on top of a weekly trading zone, but we took 2 trades in a row right over here. One of them brought us back to break even, and the other one brought us to I think it brought us back to break even, and the other one brought us to +7, I think. That's how it all played out. Yeah, that's how it all played out. So we took 2 trades in a row right here. One of them brought us to break even, and the other one brought us to +7 ticks. On the day. I think. One of them brought us to -1, the other one brought us to +7 ticks. Anyway, we ended with +7 ticks on the Russell. At the end of the live trading room, there was a trade right here, a long trade right in here, that had happened. Since then, there really hasn't been anything. It's setting up a long trade right now. Okay, it's setting up a long trade in there right now. And that was that. We're +7 ticks on the Russell. Now, let's do gold. In gold, we didn't have a lot of trades in gold, sadly. We had 2, and they were both failing trades. Trades that didn't work out for us. We went long on the up close above the trend line right here, and it stopped us out. We missed this trade right here, which would have been a break-even trade for me, and we went short on the down close below the trend line here, and that stopped us out as well. Gold was really, really difficult to trade today. You know, I had drawn in these boxes at the end of the live trading room saying, you don't want to trade gold until it gets out of that range. and I don't think it's going to get out of that range today. All right, so that was gold. Soybeans. Let's take a look at the soybeans. On the soybeans, our first trade right here on soybeans went for 8 ticks profit. Okay, we took 8 ticks profit on that one. It was a, and I actually entered it wrong. It should have been, the entry should have been up here at 93.50, and I actually entered in at 92.75, I think, right down here. I messed it up, but I was in the trade, and I took my risk off the trade as soon as I could, and it worked out for me. I had 8 ticks profit. It changed directions, and there was really no divergence right here on this. There was really no divergence there. So we couldn't take the up close and that move up right there. I was looking for it to get up to 98, which you can see it just did. Back here, I got long on the up close off the BBC right here, and we took 4 ticks profit on that. And I was looking for it to get to 98. It came within a tick of it, but it didn't quite make it there. All right. And that was it for the soybeans. Now, the natural gas has not done anything all day. I mean, it's like it's not even trading. Look at this. This was the natural gas today. Not a single trade on the natural gas today. Okay. I mean, it was so bad I didn't even look at it. On the ES, we did have... I'm trying to slide the ES over here. On the ES, there it goes. We did have some movement on the ES today. Yeah, I'll blow it up. It was stuck inside a zone most of the morning, but in the last half an hour, it went zone to zone. You know, we had this up move, and there was a chance to go long right here. I pointed out to everybody in the live trading room, from 64 and a quarter right there, and right up to the weekly trading zone. Bang. 64 and a quarter up to 67.75, so 3.5 points were available there on that move. All right, and that was the ES today. So if I slide that back, those are all the markets we traded. We ended plus 7 ticks on the Russell, minus 16 ticks on gold, plus 12 ticks on soybeans, and plus 4 ticks on crude oil. Here is our spreadsheet again. Just so you can see, that's exactly what we did. 14 and 16. It took 112 minutes, I think, to get our points. But anyway, that's it. All right, we got our goal for the day, $100 a contract, and on the month we were up at $5,132.50 per contract. Keith, because I like to do it myself. I do it manually because it's based on one of two things. The question is, why don't I have the trading platform move stop to break even automatically? You could have it move to break even based upon, you know, just going 4 ticks in profit, move it to break even. But there are times when you want to move it to break even when you don't have 4 ticks in profit, when you only have 3 or 2 sometimes. You know, a close on the other side of the MA1 or 4 ticks profit, whichever happens first, is when you move the stop to break even. Okay? That's the rule. Alright, so that's where we stand on the month, and one more time I'll show you how to take the free trial if you have not already taken the free trial. Okay? You just go here to CFRN.net, put in your name, put in your email address, click register for a free trial. Once you register for the free trial, you'll be sent a link, confirmation link. You got to click on that confirmation link because we don't know you registered for the free trial until you click on that link. All right, once you do that, you'll be sent all kinds of stuff to get into the live trading room. I did, Jim, 15 trades today. And that was it, guys. That was our day today in the live trading room. We did get our goal. We got it right at the very end. And the last trade. All right?
So, on Monday, how many trades did it take you?
Hold on just a second. Let me get this out. Monday would have been the 14th. On the 14th, it took 12 trades.
Okay, and then on Tuesday?
Tuesday, it took 2 trades.
Wednesday?
4 trades.
Thursday?
2 trades.
Friday?
15 trades.
Okay. Now, you have 50 trades a week, 10 trades per day. So let's go 12 plus 2 plus 4 plus 2 plus 15 equals 35. So you used up 35 of your allocated trades for the week.
Yes.
Out of your 50.
Yes.
So what does that mean? For those who aren't familiar with how that works, the whole 24/20 blueprint philosophy, just based on this week's activity, with two really rough days in there, a 12 and a 15, he'll still roll 15 trades into next week. So next week, instead of having 50 trades to work with, he'll actually have 65 because he's got 15 that he didn't use this week. And they continue to roll forward and accrue and roll forward. Once you get on that 24/20 blueprint and you start to work that thing, they just keep rolling. They don't expire. They never go bad. That's designed to take the pressure off of you when you sit down each day to go to work. Because, quite frankly, many traders, if they sit down to go to work and get stopped out two times in a row on any given day, they can't place another trade. They're shell-shocked is kind of a, probably an appropriate term. All confidence is gone. The system's not working. You know, whatever. We have a myriad of excuses, and we have a habit of, you know, getting some stinking thinking going on in our head and some negative self-talk, and it just becomes a really rough downhill spiral. And so knowing how many available trades you have, because we're learning to think in probabilities. So the 24/20 blueprint is based upon it taking you 10 trades every day to make $100. Now that's per contract. Obviously you start with one, you graduate to two, and then to three, and then to four. It's all mapped out in the blueprint. Each module, you'll know exactly when it's time to add another contract. And at the end of 24 months, that's when you arrive at contract number 20. You can stop there. You can continue to add. You can stop before you get to 20. You might get comfortable with 5. You might get comfortable with 7 or 10. Any number that you're comfortable with, if you want to park it there and spend more than the allocated time for that module, which would be 5 weeks, maybe you want to spend 6 months at 5 because you're really comfortable there and things are working well for you. The plan is flexible. The most important aspect of the plan is that it takes that pressure off of you so that getting stopped out a couple times in a row at the beginning of the day, it doesn't have that powerful impact that it once did. It doesn't, it's not that kick in the gut, okay? It's just another trade. And you don't react in a negative way. You don't throw or kick or scream. You just say, next. And here comes the next trade down the assembly line. They just keep coming. They just keep coming until you shut it down. On the good day, day when there's, you know, it takes two trades. One day this week it was 2 trades, 2 minutes. Now, yes. That day can be just as difficult for some traders as the rough day. Because you're 2 minutes into your work day. I mean, you actually showered and put on a clean shirt and the whole 9 yards, and 2 minutes into the day, you're done. Well, what am I supposed to do, go back to bed? Well, no, there's plenty of other, you know, positive things you can do with your life. You don't have to go back to bed. But if you're following the blueprint, you stop trading there. You at least stop trading in your live account. So throwing a lot of information at you. If you want more information, if you want to really know how that thing works, we can do a private go-to meeting, private go-to webinar. I'll probably do a webinar sometime next week anyway. If you want to be a part of that, then just let us know, support@cfrn.net. So you can be a part of the public one, or if you want to do a private one, just let us know. Okay, Michael, thanks a lot. I know you've got things you said you had to do, and so
yes.
With that, I'll let you go.
All right, buddy.
Mike, right. I'm not sure what's wrong with your headset, buddy. It says Mike says it sounds like I'm talking underwater. Mike Reed was going to come on today.
Yeah, I
maybe
thought I
my
heard.
Microphone won't sound that way. I hope you just need to talk slowly. I think. Boy, I wish I could help you figure out what was wrong with your headset. But we'll get you on here in just a few minutes, Mike, and hopefully we can carry on a conversation. If not, then doggone it. You could always dial okay. in if you wanted to on your phone. That's an option as well. So, Mike B., I'll say goodbye to you, and then I'm going to run through these alerts from last night real quick, and then we're going to talk to Mr. Mike Reed from TradeStalker.com and, of course, Mr. David Williams from PageTrader.com.
Excellent. All right. Take care.
All right. Take
you
care.
Too, Mike. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Okay, we covered this trade from the Thomas Observatory here, where we had that head and shoulders, went from the top of the head down to the neckline, and then from the neckline down to that 1943 long-term
I have the
projection
charts.
Number. Yeah. I'm sorry?
I have the charts.
Oh.
You probably want to grab them.
I probably should.
There you go.
Okay, there we go. So we've already covered this trade, and so I don't know if you saw in the comment box there, Thomas, but I complimented you, good eyes, for catching that. Now, you had remembered this number. You thought it might have been a weekly trading zone, I think, was if I recall correctly yesterday, but it wasn't. It was one of these numbers. But look how important that number turned out to be. Again, these numbers, it's a new formula. It's completely different from how I arrive at the weekly trading zones. But so far, it's been working out pretty good. We've bounced back up to the zone here at 59.60 and additionally up to 67.80. We'll talk about that in a little more detail here in a moment. In fact, let's just real quick, let's run through the alerts from last night and then go talk to Mike Reed. All right. There's a message, partners, in here for you about some of the things we were talking about last night in the workshop. Check that out and take a look at those over the weekend, okay? We were looking at that on a 10,000 contract chart. I'm suggesting in this message here that you go through it on the hourly, and I'll give you an idea why here in just a moment. Now, as far as trades last night, we had a gold trade that said to consider being short at 13.14. Day before yesterday, it was long above 13.17, and then last night, it was short below 13.14. On the day that we had the alert to be long above 13.17, we put in a swing high at 25.90, so that was $8. And then last night, from 13.14 down to the swing low at 13.05, that would be a $9 move. So we had an $800, $900 move in gold. Okay, that's per contract. Moving on, we had an alert on crude. Consider being long above 103.75 or short below 103.45, whichever presents first. And it was to the downside, 103.45. Now, this first hourly candle dropped to 103.35. So that gave us the 10 ticks we were looking for to the tick. And because this is an hourly chart, it doesn't look like there's a lot there, but there's 10 ticks from 103.45 to 103.35. Price then comes back, gets above the trigger, comes down again. Okay, important prices, important areas are almost always tested. You hear me say that every day because we see it in our alerts almost every day. And down it comes again, this time putting in a swing low at 102.58. So from 103.45 down to 102.58. So whether you just took 10 here or whatever you got out of that, or if you took the whole thing, congratulations. That worked out nicely. Okay, on the Dow, consider being short below 16,880 or long above 16,960. Let's take a look at the Dow. To the upside, 16,960. So far, we've hit a swing high of 17,026. On the Dow, we simply look for 20 points. Okay, the Dow doesn't break it down into ticks. It pays $5 per point. And so 20 points gives us our $100 per contract per day. Okay, after the Dow, we had an alert on the Russell. And on the Russell, consider being long above 1132. Okay. Now, see how this thing, we ticked right above 32, retreated back into the support area, and then back again through 32. So this could cause you to get stopped out, depending upon how you're entering your trade. That little tick, you know, can get you out. Question is, are you willing to get back in? From there, we went to the zone at 42.43, and from there, we went to the zone at 49.50. Okay. Now, the Russell pays $100 per point, $10 per tick. Okay. So if we go from 32 to 33, that's a day's work. Here, from 43 to 49, that's 6 points. From 43 to 49, 6 points, that's a week's work and a Saturday. Okay. Moving on, we had the NASDAQ. And the NASDAQ, consider being long above 38.79. The NQ pays $20 per point. We got through this zone. We're getting through this zone, and it looks like we're headed for this zone. 39.30/35, which we got to that zone earlier in the week, and we're trying to do it again. I'm looking to see if that's the highest zone. No, we have one more zone above that. Chances of us seeing it today, I don't suspect that that's going to happen unless there's some big news event that comes down the pike between now and the close. On gold, we already covered the gold trade. Yes, we already covered that one. We already covered the crude. And, okay, on the S&P, this is the last one, the only one we haven't covered. Partners, this is what I wanted you to look at on that hourly chart. This is just the CFMA1 with everything else removed. Okay, we've got a red CFMA1. Price gets below it and falls. It falls from 75, with the exception of this right here, okay, it falls to a swing low 75 down to 42. Once we get back on the north side, the CFMA1 turns blue at a price of 52. We're now trading 69.50, okay? So you could have been in, let me get, every one of these moves that went from zone to zone, that's tradable. The slingshot, 2 points, as you move from zone to zone, is tradable. And this is tradable. So depending upon how you want to approach the market, intraday, swing trades, you know, instead of placing, you know, a large number of trades inside a couple hours, as we do often in the live trading room most days, if you're looking for something that is maybe 2 to 10 trades a week as opposed to a day or within a 2 hour period, there you go. Okay. Now let me get that out of the way. Just wanted to make sure the partners, we looked at that last night on the 10,000 contract partners. So remember, this weekend, your homework is to put that thing on the hourly and on the 10K. I want you to look at both of them so you get some screen time with that higher time frame. That screen time is going to benefit you greatly when you go back to the slingshot and start placing your trades on the 4-tick range chart, okay? World of difference between the two, same market, same price, but the vantage point that it gives you is phenomenal. So please, that's a tool at your disposal. Put that thing to work. Okay, we're going to do our very, very best to talk with Mr. Mike Reed. I know we're having some headphone issues and microphone issues, but Mike, I am turning it over to you now. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. How do I sound? Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you. Okay, Mike.
Do
I? I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, then that's a positive. It sounds coming through my headset. Normally sounds normal, but when I logged in here the past couple of days, you sound like you're underwater and talking to bubbles or something. But anyhow,
yeah, that's something on your end because no one else is hearing it. You know, Pete says that he can hear both of us just fine. So
no doubt.
So how's your week been? Tell us about it. We haven't talked to you.
It's got
to
be on my. Been a good week. Well, especially yesterday's most fresh in my mind. We did have a double top, not to forget, at 78. They missed by one tick, and we're just coming down from a resistance right now. We have 69.5 to 70.5 key level today. Okay. Anyways, we had that double top with the Dow and the NQ both made higher highs. The SP didn't. The VIX had dropped down like 10.49 on the close. For a new all-time high, there was only 122 stocks that were also made a new 52-week high. That was the lowest number since we started making all these new highs. So there was a lot of underlying softness, I think. And sentiment had swung from, the VIX had jumped from up above 12. Down almost to its lowest reading in years again. So things were set up. Of course, the bombing in Ukraine really exacerbated things, but we were having trouble, still nonetheless had trouble under 78. I think we hit 76, bounced back, but generally just stayed under that by a few points. Until it began to break, and then also I see that you have on your chart, is that the 43.42 for my last that was our major area for the today. That was reached, I think, about 9 o'clock or something. Last night.
Well,
I looked at my charts this morning and saw they were down there. And
it wasn't a weekly trading zone for us, Mike. Our weekly trading zone's down at 34.35, but it was a number that was important to us that we had published. I call them LTP, longer term projection, because I didn't have any other name to call them. And I'm not that clever with names, so until I think of something better. But one of the members of our community, a daily listener on the show here, had pointed out yesterday that if this Head and Shoulders did what a Head and Shoulders is supposed to do and price broke through here, that it would take us to that number, and it did. But it didn't, and I'm glad he pointed it out, because it then made perfect sense. Okay. The price turned right there and headed back up. without making it all the way to the zone. So now that's a number that was important for you, 42, 43, did you say?
43, 42 was our major area for today, for the week. I'm not sure what the – I couldn't see the exact low somewhere. So 42 and a half or – not sure, but it was right in that area.
The low was 42 and a half, yes. That's correct.
So, yeah, then it's stupid that I didn't do it while I was watching the screen because that was the turnaround there. I like catching daggers, but when they did start to turn up, you could at least, you know, get your 2 points on that out of that move.
Right.
Pretty easily.
Yeah, and on this turn here, we actually had an inside candle on the hourly.
Back to now.
Oh, go ahead, Mike. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, then you move on out of that, and then you're just going to keep. Oh, well, I think you move on out of there. You can just control the top. They start making higher highs and higher lows. That's happening all morning here so far. All the way up. So, you know, on your hourly time frame, on a chart, you've been down to a 1 minute chart. So, on all time frames, so far, higher highs and higher lows on this move.
Yeah, it's been a good week. We've had
else.
Some good volatility.
They did come back farther. I didn't think we would get all the way up to 69.5, 70.5. But they have, and we're just 8 points below on high again. So, but, this is like a boxer that keeps getting knocked down.
Yeah.
Gets back up, gets knocked down again, gets back up, and, boy, I don't know. Hasn't gotten really. Yesterday was the first day that we had any kind of bit of like capitulation. The VIX today was up 32% on the day. Huge, huge move. Yeah, that's. You see those spikes up like that at bottom if you look at a chart. Someday we'll get my other screen set up, Dwayne, so I can show you what I'm looking
at. Yeah, that would be great. I would like that very much.
It moves inverse, opposite.
I can change it to any time frame that you want.
But we need to talk over again sometime.
Okay. All right. Well, let me grab David real quick and bring him on.
No,
I know
fine.
He would like to say good morning to you. Did you want me to put it on like a 2 minute chart or a 5 minute or?
Great.
There's a real bad time lag, guys. But anyway, let me go grab David and
Dwayne,
right back.
We're fine. No, I was just. I think we're.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310 and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Hey, Dave, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, and good morning, Mike Reed. How the heck are you? Well, there's a little time delay there.
Yeah, a little bit.
What is that based on?
I couldn't tell you.
Good morning.
I don't know.
Good. Mike, there's a really big time delay, and I think I could get my messages to you faster by postal delivery. So just letting you know that.
Yeah.
I apologize.
It's all right.
I should maybe just...
It sounds like your internet has slowed down on your end, and it's taking a lot longer to get through, you know, like normal streaming to get through to you there. That's what it kind of sounds like.
Mike, did you want me to bring up a 5-minute?
I'm going to give that a shot.
Yeah.
Mike, did you want me to bring up a 5-minute or a 2-minute chart?
We're fine. We're okay.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So, David, how are you today?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Dwayne. We'll be fine.
Okay, Mike. Take care, buddy. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Mike. See you. That has to count as one of the strangest conversations I've had this morning.
Well, he's having a real, you know, he's been trying really hard all week to get on the show.
Thank you, Mike.
And, he's... Yeah, I just don't want to make it any more painful on you, Mike, than I know it's difficult with the time lag. So, you know, I don't want you to feel bad at all. We'll get you a new headset in there, and we'll get that thing cooking, and we'll be back just like new in no time at all. So, David, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, well, I was waiting for him to answer. I wasn't sure if he was still there or not. Well, anyway, good morning, everyone. I have to tell you, at the beginning of the week, I remember saying to myself, well, you know, we have certain indications and so on. We'll go over them later. But, you know, maybe it won't be as active a week or something as normal. And obviously, we've had a very, very active week. I'm talking about the markets in general. And I'm sure many, many other traders were involved in some of the bigger moves that I hope they were on some level, and I hope they were on the right side, and I hope they used protective stops if they were on the wrong side. I wish I had a program of some kind that a person could run in the background that calculates where his normal stop would be placed and where he ultimately allowed the market to go, and at the end of the month, it would print a check, but it's not a real check, but it prints a check up that would essentially show you how much money you would have had in your account if you had just used the stop. I'm sorry, my headset's doing something a little weird here. Does my voice sound okay, Dwayne?
Yeah, you sound okay.
Charming, easy to get along with, lovable, that sort of sound. Does it have that?
Yeah.
Okay. But you know what I'm saying, so that people could really see at the end of the month. I spoke to somebody this morning. I just want to just get it out again. I know I hammer on this point, but I spoke to somebody this morning who was in soybeans. And if you were to look at soybeans, you can take a look at where they are. And he is long the soybean contract. Of course, I'm not going to know who he is, but he's an idiot. Okay, because he's holding on to a position that has been long proven to be wrong, and he's just hurting himself. And the market, you know, soybeans is going down further. Maybe it's nicer to say he's a wonderful human being that's just not using a stop. Is that a little better?
Yeah. That's
okay. But he should know better. He's essentially long from around 11:02. So go take 11:02, take a look at where that is, and take a look at where the market is now.
1086 and a half.
Yeah. That's quite a distance that he's been holding.
It is, at $50 per point.
At $50 per point, thank you. And he got hope by the bounce that came from the 17th. Why do you have to be in hope at all? What does hope have to do with this? Why is that such a... you know, thing, because hope springs eternal, that's why. But he was hoping that the market would move back up. It did somewhat, but he didn't take it off, and now they've sold off and made yet new lows. So now he's even in a worse position than he was before. This is the plight of people who want to be right more than they want to trade well. That's the difference. If you want to trade well, you protect your capital. If you want to be right, you hold on until the market makes you right. And right now, he may have to hold on for a long time because this move could really – they could really run this thing, you know, on the downside. I don't have any forecast for it right now, but I'm just saying that it is moving down and, you know, he could get himself in trouble. So just yet again another example of the beauty and majesty of the protective stop. Not only could any person be out of the market, he could be possibly, perhaps, taking advantage of another move. It's a twofer in your favor. You know, you really get a big push by doing it the right way. So another way to think about this is, do you want to be right or do you want to trade well? I think that's a good distinction because you can't always be right, but you can always trade well. So maybe that's a good way to think about it.
That's true.
So anyway, I know most of the listeners here, I know we have people that are good at this, but anybody can fall into this habit. I was a bad offender myself for a long, 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 long time. And it's so much better the other way. So there you are. Just wanted to bring that up. It's old news to most of our people, especially since I talk about it a lot. But I like to describe it in different ways so that people remember to do it. And if you say to me, well, yeah, the market moves down and it stops me out, I don't want to be stopped out, I would say, no, nobody wants to be stopped out. But if you're going to be wrong, it's a good idea to be stopped out. If the market's going to go further, it's a good idea to be stopped out. And then you can practice getting better at what you're doing. And so, you know, properly placing your trade, properly, you know, assessing the market and all that. So, anyway, again, no matter what you know, no matter how brilliant you may be, whatever that is, it's all going to go away if you don't use protective stops. That's just it. I don't care. You can name any of the great legends of the past. Jesse Livermore went broke like 5 times in his life, and you go broke because you're not using stops. He let positions run against him. Broke. That's not a drawdown. That's a wipeout. I don't call broke a drawdown. Okay? A drawdown is when you use a stop and you get stopped out. He went broke a whole bunch of times. So did W.D. Gann, by the way, and many others. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Gann was a big advocate of stops, as was someone else, and I'm lost on the names of some of the people we've talked about recently, you know, the Goulds, the whoevers. Mm-hmm. But no matter what you know, you will end up with nothing unless you use protective stops. The market will not always come back and make you right. So there you are. So do you want to be right or do you want to trade well? And I hope you want to trade well, because you can't be right all the time, but you can always trade well.
Yep, the dinner might not always taste good, but you can always eat it with good manners.
Well, there you are. It's a nice little flip around, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. So where are you going to take Bert to dinner? You want me to ask?
Okay, no, we went to dinner last night.
You did? Okay.
Yeah, he came in yesterday. No, I know. Just a second. Let me just type this in real quick. Okay, so, yeah, Bert Schlichter came out, and I think it was good for he and I to meet each other. I think it was good to get a chance to put a face to it. And we sat down and had a nice dinner and really just went over, we just talked and had a nice time. It really wasn't much business of any kind. It just was great to meet him. He's exactly what we have said he is, a very competent and very down-to-earth person. Mm-hmm. And somebody who doesn't get carried away with the fluff and the mystery and so on. He's really a very pen and paper, meat and potatoes, very straightforward guy. And I like that very much about him, and I'm sure you do as well, Dwayne, and everyone that probably works with him does. And he does what he says he's going to do, and he does it to the best of his ability. So he's a great great guy. He's coming over to the office this morning. So he'll be here in a little bit. We'll spend a little time together, and then we'll have lunch, and then I think he goes back tomorrow. So he'll get some work done here, I think. It is, you know, the markets are open. But it's been very good. I really enjoyed meeting him and getting a chance to just talk back and forth and see how it all gets put together, you know, when you finally meet somebody. It's probably similar to anybody else, you know, when you have talking with them on, if any of the listeners were to meet Dwayne or myself or Michael or, you know, Mike Reed, after hearing us on the radio for many, many years, you know, you really get into the voice becomes the whole three-dimensionality of the person, you know, and then when you meet the person in person, that gets expanded out, and now you're looking and you're hearing that voice you've heard all this time, but you're now adding all the facial and gestures and all the other stuff. When I speak, I move my hands sometimes, and I was watching Bert watch my hands move because he's never seen it. He doesn't know that as I'm speaking, I'm moving my hands, and now he's hearing my voice and he's seeing this new thing, and I was watching his eyes move as my hands were moving because he's not used to. You know, he's only used to hearing the sound of your voice and not necessarily seeing what you're doing and so on. So anyway, it was good. So there you are. That's my report.
I'm glad you had a good time.
Yep. Yeah, it was nice.
Yep, he's enjoying it, so.
Yeah. It was nice for him to be here. It was only 115.
Yeah, he did mention that it felt a little warm to him. He's not accustomed to those temperatures. So, luckily, there's plenty of air conditioning in Vegas, so he doesn't have to spend too much time outside.
Yeah, if you want to test your new air conditioning idea, Las Vegas or Arizona is a great testing ground to see how your product works. Now, one thing I want to mention, this has nothing to do with anything we're talking about, but we do talk a little bit before we get to markets and stuff, is that one of the newer features you're seeing on newer homes, people that are, you know, building new homes, or the companies that are building new homes, and maybe your home has it, some homes have it now, which where they break the air conditioning into zones. So the air moves from zone to zone to zone. Does that sound familiar?
It does.
Anyway, so as an example, you can have your downstairs and you can have your upstairs, but if you're home alone, you can turn the air conditioning on and it'll only air condition the downstairs. It won't air condition the whole house because nobody's upstairs. In the old days, when you turned it on, it turned on air conditioning in every single room. So some of the new homes have two zones, and some of the newer ones now have three zones, three-zone air conditioning. So one of the interesting qualities of a three-zone or two-zone house is it only uses one air conditioner. The new ones, you're not using the dual air conditioners. It uses one, and it uses a series of baffles that move, and they route the air, all of the output of that air conditioner, that furnace, that what's the thing called, the air handler. If you turn on all the zones, then all of those baffles are open and the whole house gets air conditioned. If you turn on only two of the zones, those two zones are going to get a higher intensity of air coming out because you're not putting air out in that third zone. If you only turn on one zone, the full force of that air conditioner, which would normally be used, that 5-ton, whatever it is, for the big house, 1,800 square feet or whatever it is, the full force of that air conditioner is going only to one zone, which might be a master bedroom or, you know, something like that. And the air comes out and chills that room down like an icicle instantaneously. So if you are looking at new homes, and most of them probably have it, I hope you recognize the value of having the multi-zone is that you can direct the full force of the air conditioner that would normally be distributed across the whole house to just one zone if you're home alone, and you can chill any part of the house, upstairs or downstairs, down to meat locker temperatures in just minutes because you're getting all of that force to that one zone. And so I thought that was pretty cool, and I demonstrated it for myself, and I went room to room, and it is fantastic. So that's one of the new things in air conditioning. You know, it's meaningless to everybody but me, but I wanted to tell you that it was pretty good.
Well, that is interesting.
Yeah, if you had an office like Dwayne and you have a two-story house, and many two-story homes, typically, you know, the air conditioning works better on the downstairs than it does on the upstairs because heat rises and so on. Mm-hmm. But if you're upstairs with a three-zone air conditioner and your master has one of them, it doesn't matter. You can chill your master down to whatever temperature you want because the whole system is pouring into that room. It'll blow your hair right out of your head. It's seriously, it's that strong. And some people, like myself, I like good air conditioning. I want to, you know, women are get chilled easily, but many of them do. But men, we have our thing, and if we want to, we can adjust it. So it's a neat feature, and if you're looking at new homes or doing any of that stuff, check it out, and you'll see what I'm talking about, and that might, you know, be a cool feature for you to know that you've got. Anyway, I'd like to also, if we can, at some point in the next few weeks, have Rob Howe back on our program, because sure. Rob is going to update everybody on both interest rates and all these other things that we've talked about so much, including the housing market and some of the things that are happening now across the United States. And I want to remind people that there are still places that have lower prices than other places. They may not rebound as strong. And there's places like Detroit where if you wanted to, you could, if you were in a position to do so, perhaps review Detroit to spend some time there because the prices aren't going up real fast at any point, but spend some time and take a look at what you could buy in Detroit, like a whole office building for what you might pay for a house, you know, that kind of thing. And you could say, well, yeah, maybe nothing happens and Detroit goes away. Yes, that's correct. You don't get to buy a whole office building for what you would buy a house for unless there's some risk. Just saying. So, but you might want to check that out.
Yeah, no, the same kind of opportunities presented themselves in Greece, the big crash and burn there. There will be dynasties created out of that downfall.
That's right.
Those who had the funds and the credit and all the things that were necessary
to take advantage of it.
To take advantage of it. And, you know, buying it is only one part of the equation. You know, once you own it, now you have to manage it and then somehow turn it into an income stream. It's just like with the trade. I mean, you know, you've got to manage the thing once you get into it. So
no, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And you have to be ready to do all that. But I'm just saying, just as the beginning of a plan, you're right. It's just the start of a plan is to own the property. Yep. But there still are really good deals out there. And in some places like Detroit, somebody that has that's willing to take on additional risk could really run. And I don't think Detroit's going away. I think I wouldn't want somebody to necessarily act on this because I don't have as much in research and work involved in it as I did in some other ideas. But this city is probably not going to go away, and it's going to come back ultimately. And it very much so, you can go into that city and buy things that could literally be worth 5 and even 10 times what you paid for them in a decade, as an example, something like that. So, you know, that would be something for people to look at. We'll have Rob come on and talk a little more about real estate and some of these opportunities and various things. So I'll let you know when he's free. Yeah, it would be fun. We haven't had him in a while.
It's been a while. Yesterday we talked about why this Malaysian airliner was flying over such a dangerous area. And today we have some answers. Most of the decisions about a route are taken by the airlines themselves, but they must avoid no-fly zones. The area where the Malaysian airliner crashed had a no-fly zone in place up to 32,000 feet. The airliner was flying at 33,000 feet. Now, that's frightening to know that you're flying over a no-fly zone, but you're 1,000 feet above it.
But you're safe now because you're 1,000 feet higher.
You should be safe as long as somebody didn't pack a little extra gunpowder in that rocket that they're getting ready to launch. There's also national aviation bodies to consider. For example, the U.S.'s Federal Aviation Administration in April issued a notice to airmen that prohibited U.S. airliners from flying over the Crimean region of Ukraine and nearby areas of the Black Sea and the Sea of Azov. After the crash of MH17, it widened that to cover the entire whole of Ukraine. British Airways has been avoiding eastern Ukraine for some time, but many airlines continue to fly over it. According to Flight Radar 24, which monitors live flight paths, the airlines that most frequently flew over Donetsk, I can't even pronounce that, in eastern Ukraine, where this incident happened, were Aeroflot, 86 flights, Singapore Airlines, 75 flights, Ukraine International Airlines, 62, Lufthansa, 56, and Malaysian, 48. Now, that's just in the last week. And they go on to say it was not necessarily a risky approach. The chance of a rocket reaching above 32,000 feet was considered remote, according to the author of a book, Why Planes Crash. The UK Civil Aviation Authority says airlines' decisions will be based on a range of factors, advice from the Foreign Office, warnings in the area, weather, navigation age, strikes, which airports are out of action. However, they will almost always fly the shortest route. A long detour around a war zone will cause delays and add extra fuel cost. Now, on the 17th of July, selected flights over East Ukraine on the afternoon, that would be yesterday afternoon, there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Virgin Atlantic even flew over there. That's not Virgin Air. Are they the same? Is Virgin Air and Virgin Atlantic the same company? Airlines fly over most trouble spots, according to Michael Robertson, co-founder of Flight Radar 24. They have to get from A to B in the most efficient manner possible. Syria is probably the only airspace that everyone avoids. Other trouble spots, North Korea and Somalia, airliners do fly over, he says, although it's hard to verify how common that is. A pilot told The Guardian that we would often avoid areas where there is air-to-air conflict, but we flew over Iraq and Afghanistan when the British and U.S. armed forces were deployed there because only one side was using military jets. Airlines tend to be secretive about operational details, perhaps for security reasons. Qantas says, we don't fly over the Ukraine. For London to Dubai, we fly 400 nautical miles south of the region. So, yeah, I mean, I just wonder if the people on that plane, the passengers, knew that they were flying 1,000 feet above a no-fly zone.
Well, a couple other little pieces of information have come out, which I'm sure many people are already aware of. But the missile that hits a plane at 35,000 feet, 34,000 feet, is a very sophisticated missile. It is very, very, in fact, it's basically impossible that these people that are operating the basic missile stuff did it. It's really almost certainly something to do with the Russians, and it's a sophisticated missile. It takes literally a year's worth of practice and training with this equipment to do this correctly, to get these to get a super high flying thing. This is a lot of training that gets involved in it, and they are, I think the news anyway has said that they're of the belief, they think it's almost without a doubt Russian oriented. You know, it came sourced from that type of equipment. So, you know, it really brings, and the president was on today talking about this and so on.
Right.
It really brings a bad taste to this, that it could, you know, was this just done on purpose, or was it, did they really mistake it for another plane? Or I don't know. I really don't know. Nobody knows what really happened, but what we do know is that the missile that was used comes from much more sophisticated equipment than those guys on the ground have, the guys that are in that area now. So, again, it would be nice to have somebody in an administration that knows something about foreign policy to deal with this correctly, because, you know, it's really a titanic kind of situation where we have one foreign policy disaster after another in front of us here, as this administration doesn't really know what to do with all these situations. They're just not up to the job. It's just that simple. I don't hate black people. They're just not up to the job. That's it. Along with the white people in the White House, none of them are up to this job. They fail every single time. And here's another one. Here's another situation that comes up that's going to require a more than words, more than just delay and wait till it goes out of the mind of the public. It requires real insight into these situations. We don't have it. We just don't have it right now. So there you are.
Yeah, there is an article out today that came not from a Fox News organization. It came from, let me find it here real quick. The right and the left finally agree the president has checked out. Now, this was published originally by MarketWatch. And they're not a right-wing organization by any stretch. However, if it's one thing if hardened critics like Fox News anchor Megyn Kelly ask whether the Obama presidency is imploding, as she did last month, citing a string of foreign policy debacles and domestic scandals, or if Republican lobbyist Ed Rogers says the president seems to have taken an early retirement, as he did in his Washington Post blog earlier this month. It is another, however, if the chief U.S. commentator for the Financial Times, Edward Luce, takes Obama to task, as he did this week, in an op-ed titled, Farewell to Trust, Obama's Germany Syndrome. Luce takes the flap over the CIA spying on an ally like Germany as symptomatic of an administration that has lost the trust of the public both at home and abroad. The British journalist notes that Obama dismisses such charges as cynical, but Luce rejects that label for himself and other critics in the press. Most reporters are better described as skeptical, Luce says. A cynic believes there is nothing new under the sun. A skeptic resists gullibility. On the basis of the latter, Mr. Obama does not appear to relish being chief executive. Kelly dismissively refers to Obama's response to crisis as smiling, golfing, and at this very moment, partying.
Fundraising.
A picture of him having a beer in a Starbucks with a couple of young ladies. So they go on to how many times he's played golf and how many fundraisers compared to other presidents. But when MSNBC anchor, which is very much to the left of the aisle, interviewed President Obama last month on the subject of Iraq, network commentator Donnie Deutsch, an avowed Democrat, said, I've never seen a less engaged look in his eyes. He almost seemed, I don't want to say checked out because that's not the right thing, but watching him, his cadence was different. He feels like he almost just wants to go home at this point. Another commentator on that program, Mark Halperin, said that Obama's answers on the Syrian situation were nuanced and accurate, but people expect more from a president than a great analysis of the problems. It's up to the President of the United States to take some bold action to try to address them. Halperin wrote a book called Game Change, a best-selling book, about the 2008 presidential campaign, and not just sit there and say, here's why this is hard, here's why this is hard. The White House rejects this criticism as unfair, and no doubt some of it is. They say Obama is now jetting around the country to escape Beltway cynicism and connect with real Americans. His approval rating has sunk to 41.6 from above 44 2 months ago. More significant, perhaps, is that the gap between those who disapprove and those who approve has widened to 12 points from just 7. And so both sides of the aisle have just kind of, you know, we have a president who maybe is just not so interested in the job anymore. It's kind of like been there, done that. And
let me
now he's ready to move on to the next stage of his life. But he still has a job to do. Go ahead.
I was going to say, my characterization is that it's not that he's been there and done that. He is completely overwhelmed. He is tired of being challenged by these big events that require a response that's not merely political. It requires a response that actually has leadership, a quality that he doesn't know what it is. He's blind to that. But he knows he doesn't have it. And he certainly looks the part. He's the classic figurehead that is really not doesn't really concern himself with the events as much as he concerns himself with the political side of it, always being right, never agreeing to any criticism. He's never agreed to any criticism. You'll never find any criticism that he doesn't feel is unfair or unwarranted and so on. But in the end, I think he is just worn out by a never-ending stream of things that happen, many of which, not all, but many of which are a result of his own earlier decisions and own positions that he took on things that he's not willing to take credit for now, that he took those positions and that they resulted in all of this. Iraq is a tremendously good example of those decisions. He, of course, blames others for our troop withdrawal, but the America doesn't look to other people to tell us whether we should leave our people there or not. That's something we do. We put the blood and treasure and all that. So I think Mr. Obama is worn the hell out. That's what I think he is. He's tired of one thing after another where he knows he really doesn't know what to do with this stuff. He's the wrong guy for this job, and especially under this time. I mean, he makes speeches still that he says it's the most safe place, you know, the world's the safest it's ever been. And what world are you looking at, you know, that he makes these kinds of comments? And, you know, a couple of weeks ago he was making that speech. I don't know where he's coming from. He is as divorced from reality, or he really sees reality and he just wants to play the divorced message. But he's worn out. That's what I think it is. I think it's very kind to say that he's disengaged. I think he's worn the hell out. And he's tired of one challenge after another hitting him and not having any developed anything other than a political response, which is to give great analysis. It's like saying after a market move, somebody saying, here's the reason the market move happened, and you give this tremendous answer to why the market did something. But you didn't trade it. You didn't make any money on it. You might have even lost money on it. But you got a great answer for why it happened.
Right.
That's what it's like to give great analysis on these events and then have no leadership to actually take any action. So, whatever skills he does have, and he does have some skills, they're not in this area. They're certainly not in foreign policy. I mean, for God's sakes, everybody knows that now, the left and the right. And I'm glad to hear that they finally are caving a little bit on the left and agreeing to what everyone has been saying, which is this is preposterous. You know, it started out from the very beginning. He was apologizing right from the start for America. He thought if you went around the world and apologized for America, if you went and did that, that is the most backwards thinking you could ever get. That is so ridiculous, and that's where it started. That was right when you knew something is wrong with the way this man's thinking with regard to these people, with regard to America's greatness.
Yep. A bit of good news before we go to the markets. This is, I think what these guys have done is just incredible. It's a $7 device that will revolutionize personal computing. It's a little device called the KeePod, and it's spelled KEEPOD. It can be plugged into the USB port of any shared laptop, netbook, or desktop, transforming it into a personal computer for each user. Not since Israeli serial entrepreneur Dov Moran changed the world with his disk-on-key flash drive Has anyone come up with a similarly disruptive idea? Using Moran's invention for the basis for Keypod, it's a fully portable operating system. Two guys, one from Israel and one from Italy, Nissan and Francesco, discovered that, and this is going to just, this will stagger you, discovered that 5 billion people, or 70% of the world's population, have no access to personal computing. Huh. That's no smartphone, no nothing, no local library. Knowing it is neither possible nor environmentally responsible to manufacture enough computers to fill the needs, they came up with the idea of loading a $7 disk-on-key with a unique version of Google's Android 4.4 operating system. Keypod enables groups of people to share any old laptop, netbook, or desktop with its hard drive removed. Each person simply plugs the $7 device into the computer and gets a PC with individual password-protected settings, programs, and files. We're breaking a few paradigms in the world of computing and digital devices, one of the guys told the Israeli news channel. We're making personal computing like public transport. Not everyone can have a shiny new car, but you can hop on a bus. Thanks to a resoundingly successful crowdfunding campaign and a partnership with the organization Live in Slums, the two guys introduced the Keypod to a school in the Mathar slum of Nairobi, Kenya. They brought in computers that were previously destined for landfills. Now, this is the number that I found so staggering. The fact that 70% of the world doesn't have access to a computer, that was a little surprising. But this one here, in the U.S. alone, just in the U.S., 85,000 computers are thrown out every single day. 85,000. Now, in my house, I know that we have in the garage, there's probably two or three old computers that don't work properly or they have some kind of an issue. That's how they ended up in the garage. In my office, in the storage cabinet or the closet, there's probably two or three laptops of varying ages that have lost their usefulness. But when I read that number, in the U.S. alone, 85,000 computers are thrown out every single day. We can give a big percentage of them a new life with Keypod. In Nairobi or anywhere else, one computer can serve 25 to 30 people every week. The coolest thing is that we move something at the people-to-people level. Keypod is really about grassroots activity that anyone can do with an old laptop and a Keypod, a $7 stick, or two in a community center or school where it's needed. It's an ecosystem of ideas and things together. To devote their full attention to Keypod, which is Hebrew for porcupine and descriptive of the project in English, they left successful careers providing information security and enterprise solutions to banks and telecom companies across Europe to start this operation. About a year ago, we started to think how to leverage this technology to do something better than selling it to executives. We had a feeling we could work it out to give computer access to everyone. We've put principles ahead of profit. At the same time, Keypod is a sustainable social business, not a charity. The sale of each Keypod device at cost generates about $2 in profits. Everything we make, we give back to the community, and it's just a really nice, warm, and fuzzy story that it's going to get the world online. And the fact that they thought outside of the box, took existing technologies, and brought them together, I love it. I think it's a wonderful thing. And 85,000 computers thrown away a day? Is it any wonder we have landfill problems? I mean, my goodness. But anyway, so it's K-E-E-P-O-D, guys. I'll bring you up a picture of it. I'm sure I've got one here. Just a little stick. And, you mean, you can even breathe life into your old whatever it is that you have in the garage or in the storage closet. Keepod.org. There we go. A $7 computer. Access for everyone. Well, we won't be able to hear it because audio and video comes off two different computers, but you guys can go check it out. It's K-E-E-P-O-D.org. O-R-G. And, man, love it. All right, David, you want to go to the markets?
Sure.
Here we go. S&P, I've kind of covered everything I've got to say about it for now, so if you want to take it and run with it, go right ahead.
Okay. Well, where to begin? I'll tell you. Let's go back a little bit. It's Friday. Let's take a minute and review how we got here, and then we can kind of put together a few ideas for where we're going. First of all, going way back to May 26th, May 27th, this is when the runaway bull market was really identifiable, and we started talking about the idea that this was a runaway market back then on the radio program. It has certainly become just that, a runaway bull market, and we had a number of issues that had come up with this market that made it obvious that it was a runaway market, that there wasn't going to be anything anytime soon that this market was going to be moving down or anything like that. So we went up, and then recently we had had a forecast for a move up to this call was made back on July 2nd, and we had called for the market to move up from July 2nd's low, or roughly around 1966, up to 1978. We're looking for a reversal off that. And so far, that really has been they did go up to 78. They got to 78 and a quarter, and that so far has been the high of the market. Then we had, during this week on Monday, to our people, we'd given out that Thursday would be a very important, powerful directional move for most. You know, we felt there was a lot of markets that would have powerful directional moves. No, I don't right now. Yeah, I'll check it in a moment. Let me finish this line of thought. And we'd set up a number of wild card kind of setups for different markets other than the S&P. But the S&P is included in that. We had, if you take a look at Thursday, and I mentioned it on the radio on Wednesday or Tuesday, I don't remember which day, but we had a very large move in the S&P down. We had a very large move in the gold, or decent-sized move in the gold up. We had a very large move in crude, and we had a very large move in treasury bonds. All of those markets were related to what we talked about, the importance of Thursday of this week, and all of the week was sort of geared around that, and it really worked out beautifully. It was for us one of the most successful weeks in terms of having a wide range of markets that we were in have big moves, you know, big runs based on this. So we really had an impressive market movement in a number of markets based on that cycle, which we talked about the other day, did have its roots in an astronomical setup that we follow. And we've done this, we've talked about this before, and we've done these kinds of moves before. Anyway, the market did move down and test again for us. We're thinking of it in terms, there are some levels below 47.48, but we've never had a close below that. And today they spiked down a little bit lower. And as we mentioned weeks back, that 48 level, 47 level is very important to us. We'll close above it today, of course. And that leaves the market still inside a bull, runaway bull market. So beautiful rebound today, and it should be very interesting to see how the market resolves this now position that we're at, you know, with the fact that we have a bottom. And those of you, by the way, with reflected wave, you have, you know that July 21st is the next important daily reflected wave bottom. That's Monday. So obviously the low came in one trading day early, and that's fine. That's often what happens in the market inside an ongoing uptrend here. So that's basically the that's kind of an accounting for how we got to where we are. We are looking forward to, you know, next week. Today's Friday, of course, and we'll talk more about it in just a little bit here. Early next week to see what, if there's more forecasts. And we have a couple things that we're working on now, but we've had a beautiful rebound here, no doubt about it. Stay with me just for one moment here. Bert Schlichter from Daniel's Trading is in the office. He's in the house.
In the house. Hey, Bert.
He's in the house. Bert, will you just yell something in the background there so they can hear you through my microphone? Say, this is Dwayne Reeves, a fellow you might know. Do you hear? Okay, he's
hey,
in the
Bert.
Background there. Yeah, he heard you. Anyway, I want to let people know that Bert's much better looking in person than he is in his picture, and that I am as well. I just want to cover that ground. The first thing he said to me when he met me, he says, you are good looking. And I said, thanks, Bert. I said, you're not bad yourself, you know. No. So he's here. I'm going to text Bert just for a moment. I'm going to text you the password so that you can get that in there. Let me just text this to him momentarily here. It'll take us a split second. There we go. Okay. So that's everything we have on the S&P. There were some intraday opportunities earlier. They were waiting to see if they didn't really confirm to set up and trade, so we didn't take them. But beautiful advance, beautiful recovery. And I'll tell you this, without going into too much, I'm starting to be a little suspicious at this point that we could, under a certain set of conditions that we're laying out in William's Edge, we could see further decline. But in order to do that, certain things have to happen that we're waiting early next week to see. And if those do happen, I'll bring them up on the program. Right now, we have done probably 2 days' worth of reflected wave work, and so to speak, the bottom that's come in. We've had a very good rebound today, and the market has done essentially what might normally take 2 days to do. So there you are. I don't have much else, Dwayne, to add to it just right now for the S&P.
Okay. Guys, anybody have any questions on the S&P? Let's go ahead and catch them while we're here, if you have any. And
yeah.
Brian just sent me a video link that he thought everyone would enjoy, so I'm going to just put it in the chat box for you guys. I'm not going to attempt to play it, but there it is. Here's something I think everyone will appreciate. It's a Carl Sagan video.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So
that is great.
I don't have any questions in the chat box on the S&P, so if you want to go to a different market or if you have some charts you want to show.
Let's see. I do have a few charts. Let's go over a couple things that happened yesterday, and then we'll review a few things here. And then please, if you do have any questions or comments, bring them up and we'll address them. Okay. Dwayne, give me just a moment before I take that chart from you. I can still talk or you can talk, but I just want to get this set up. So give me just a moment here.
Hey, guys, we are watching 1965 just below this zone here. We've got the zone at 67.68. We've got 20 minutes left in the hour of this candle. Now, if we close above 68 on this hour, then we'll probably put out an alert taking us maybe up towards the next zone overhead. We already have one in place taking us to the zone below, and that would be to consider being short below 1965 if the opportunity presents. We haven't triggered that. In fact, price has retreated, and it's up back. We're at 68.25 right now. So we've got one side of the trade in place, short below 65, and by the top of the hour, we'll have the other side in place if the market warrants it. And it's probably going to be 72, but I need to see where this is going to close. Okay, David, did I talk long enough? Nope. Okay.
Right here. I got it, Dwayne. Thank you very much for the transfers. Okay, so let's go through a couple quick things here. If you're good to go, Dwayne, you good to go on this? Have you shown the charts?
Yeah, I've already sent it over to you.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
There you go. Real quick, on the left-hand side, we have the last three reflected wave turning points. And anyone that has reflected wave has these turns. So this is a good example of that methodology at work. We've talked about it many times, but the market is swinging back and forth pretty good, and that often begins to hint of greater volatility. We'll see. So we've got more to go into the S&P or into next week. In the center, we have the big move that we're expecting in crude oil. June 16th, we had forecasts for our followers and people that may be in the audience here that were taking a trial that you could buy the August crude at 101.30 or higher for a fast one-day advance to 103.50. And this is, of course, a four-hour chart. So we got in at 101.30, and the very next day they completed the 103.50. They got up to 103.94. And we're selling off from that now. So that was a really good example of that that volatility cycle, so to speak, hitting on Thursday in just this one market. This is that same day in the S&P over here on the downside. Over here, this is that same day in gold on the upside. We had a June 16th August gold. Gold is about to test 1317 or higher. The market moved up and had the big move on Thursday. They got as high as 1325.90, and we had a nice trade in gold. We had a nice trade in crude as well based on this. A couple others. Many of you will recall that we talked all the way going back to April in the U.S. 30-year Treasury bond market that the bonds would test and touch 138.15 to 20 in the month of July 2014. And this is where the market was when we gave that call. They were trading down at 133.07. And in order for the market to complete that, it had to break out above the high that it made in May of 138.10. So it had to actually break through that resistance, and it had to do so in the month of July and touch it. And yes, you know, we're still in the month of July, obviously, and yesterday they made a swing high of 138.23, which completes the 138.20 forecast. And this goes to show you just another example of how this would be impossible in a random market. You would have to be enormously lucky to be able to have that happen and call for that. And it's not luck. So we know that. And that means that there's really probabilities in the market. And that's why we're all interested in the market, is because we do have those probabilities. And this is a little bit of a review of the week, if I may. July 7th, going way back to July 7th, we had a natural gas call for the market to move down to three distinct targets. They completed them all. This is a very sharp decline, and it continues on even into today. Natural gas continues, and we have a new forecast that we gave out early in the week, and they have not quite reached the continuation level of that. But it's a pretty remarkable move, pretty trend-ish move, and that's what you see often in the natural gas market. Let's see, Monday of this week, the U.S. dollar can be bought for advance to 80.47. We were looking for a sort of a fast pop-up. The dollar is very strong, and we had forecast that the dollar would be very strong, and we continue to believe the dollar is going to be very strong. Ever since several months ago when the euro was unable to reach a very important upside target. So the euro is very weak, and we look for lower prices just in general, and the dollar is strong, and we look for higher prices just in general. Let's see, that goes back a little too far. Let me take a couple of the others here. During the week, we had a couple of interesting moves in the S&P. Wednesday, just a couple days ago, we instructed our S&P Williams Edge followers that they could buy the S&P at or near 1968 for a quick advance to 1977, which would complete in that day's fifth hour. In the fifth hour, the swing high was 1976.75, so just one tick off the 1977. Beautiful trade. Tuesday, the day before that, we had buy during today's third hour low for a quick advance to 1969.70, and the following hour, just asking for it to occur in 1 hour, it did. They got up to 1970.50. Some really beautiful intraday trades. You might think that we're completely counter to day trading. We're not, but we don't consider it day trading because we're not trying to make it a day trade unless there's a large enough move that we believe is necessary. We want a large enough move, but if we get that, if we can forecast that large enough move, then that's okay. We don't have a problem with that at all. We would be very happy to take those trades or that trade. July 13th this week, before we started on Monday, watch for a test of 68.69 in Monday's early session, and they ran straight up to it. They actually ran up to 74. This is before the big decline, of course. I think that's probably the oldest one that we have there. And then a couple others real quick, and then we'll take any questions. Canadian dollar, no, that was the previous week. Crude, previous stuff. Okay, so I think that's everything that we had. But what an impressive amount of markets for 1 week to have big directional moves. You know, you can't get them all necessarily, but the fact that they're there and the fact that they do these moves is very interesting, makes you want to be in the market, makes you want to, you know, put your trade together the best way you can and take advantage of it. And that's what we do in the Williams Edge. I'd like to give out our phone number real quick. If you have an interest in these types of setups, you can give us a call toll-free, 888-231-4702, and you can take a two-week trial of Williams Edge and get all this information really in advance, completely in advance, and start putting this to work and see if this is something that's useful to your trading strategy. So there you are.
Let's see. Question. What meaning do you assign to the decline in copper?
Beyond the one
through
day.
A reflected wave bottom, does this often trigger larger moves in the unexpected direction?
Yes.
I know in many trading systems, a failure often leads to the best moves.
It does. That's very well said. You said it better than I did. In reflected wave, if we do have what could be called a blow through or just a walk through of a important reflected wave top or bottom, it often means much larger and more important movement is attempting to happen. And sometimes it's difficult to get yourself to take that position because it leaves you, you know, it's not the normal thing to happen, but sometimes it leads, in most cases, it leads to pretty directional moves, as the listener was saying. We have a thing called a reflected wave breakout that we utilize, and we do it very effectively, and many of our trades in Williams Edge often are based upon, you know, some of them are based upon something like that anyway, if the situation arises. You know, our feeling is, you know, in our style of trading, that although it is not necessary to know the future or to even forecast the future in order to trade, there's plenty of people that trade without having that information. It has been important to me to have that information. It's always been important to me from the very beginning to have some realistic idea of what the highest likelihood price event is going to be. And that's why it's important to me. That's why we do it that way, is because that is important to me. It doesn't have to be that way. But because it is important to me and because we've been doing it for a long time that way, we've found some unique things that some edges that really does give you. Even though it's not absolutely necessary to have it, there's some really good edges that it can give you and allow you to manage things very well. So in reflected wave, when they do walk through like that, we would often look to trade something like that. We're not in copper right now, but we do occasionally trade in copper in Williams Edge. So he said it correctly.
All righty.
So there you are.
Let's see. Mary, do you see the chart now? You're having a problem seeing the chart. Richard asked if we might take a look at the bonds.
Okay.
You got anything in the bonds?
Well, as we talked about earlier, the bonds completed that bigger, longer-term, multi-month move that we've been looking for to 138.1520. I think they're reacting off of that level, and we're trading right now 138.03. So I think a weekly close this week is likely to occur below the 138.15, 138.20 level. But we also have a weekly top that we think would be due the week of July 21st. That's next week. And isn't it a nice coincidence that you're having a longer-term roadmap target get completed at the same time that you're in the 1 week early for a reflected wave top? That's exactly the condition of the bond market. So I'll let you figure out what you think that might be, but I'll also tell you that that could set up a very important decline. We're not going to take that now. We are going to wait, and we're not anxious and all that to worry about it. If we have something to do with it, we'll either start it up on Sunday or Monday, depending on market conditions. So that's the condition of the bond market. Weekly top due next week, and with the 1 week early completing a 3 or 4 month forecast.
Okay, very good. Now, Jim in Florida. So, David, how far out in time is the next reflected wave bottom in gold?
Well, that is a question that I think you would want to come to William's Edge for, because I will give out certain information here on the radio program.
There you go, Jim.
Yeah, that's a probably more important.
So does David think that today's advance could possibly indicate that yet another test or possibly even new high might still take place into next week? 1970 looks to be important resistance. High today, 69.50. So the high could be in, but further advance past that resistance could lead to possibly that test or new high. David's thoughts, and that's from Richard.
Yeah, I honestly just don't know just yet. We're going to do some work over the weekend on it. I agree with you that we've had a really good run up this morning, no question about it. Beautiful, regaining of all those levels. But I don't have right now an immediate forecast for the next move. And I want to remind people that it isn't as simple as simply saying, okay, well, now the bottom's in, now where's it going? Okay, now this has happened, now where's it going? You don't always know. There's a lot there's a lot we don't know. We only know things under certain sets of conditions, and I'm working all the time to improve that, to grow that set of conditions where I do know something. So right now, I don't know. And saying I don't know can be a beautiful thing because it leaves you untormented by trying to do something even though you don't know. And I don't have that torment. I'm happy to say I don't know, and if I do know, then I am interested and enthusiastic about taking advantage of that move. So at this point, I don't have anything new on the S&P.
Okay.
So.
And we are waiting an additional, we've got another 6 minutes, 5 minutes, to get our next hourly candle. And we've already bracketed the short side of this trade, and once this candle closes, we'll then bracket the top side of it. And so we'll have a trade going into the close, which will take us towards the 75.76 zone or the 59.60, one or the other. It'll be a bracket on either side. Now, it's possible the market may just get quiet and just kind of creep sideways into the close. That's always a possibility. We talked this morning in the live trading room, and I had an opportunity to show it to those who were in the room, and I know it's something that you and I've talked about on the show before, David, is that often in the final minutes of an hourly candle, you'll see a great amount of activity. In the particular hour we were watching this morning, we had just a very, very tight range for about 55 minutes, and it appeared as if that candle would never move or get out of that zone that it was sitting inside of. But in the final 5 minutes of the hour, it practically made a complete zone-to-zone move, and that was on this candle right here. This is the one. It just sat here right at the zone for the entire hour, and then in the final 5 minutes, it went whoosh, and then gave us our new candle. So that's why I'm...
Could you make that sound one more time? Could you just...
No, that's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. You can only do that
okay.
once. It won't happen
All right.
again.
All right.
So let's see if there's any other questions. David often shows his two-hour charts on forecasted moves. Please ask if he uses the 24-hour on the two-hour chart or the regular session hours for two-hour. You've got LE4. I'm not sure what you mean there. Two-hour bars in a day or 12 two-hour bars in a day. Thanks. Okay.
I think I get what he may be asking.
Yeah, go ahead.
We generally use, there are some markets like the currencies where we do use the Globex in the currencies, and even in the currencies sometimes we don't. It just depends. But I think, is he really asking the question about the Globex, or is he talking about the specific time frame that we developed a trade on, or I wasn't quite sure of a part of that question. So,
I think what he wants to know is, let me scroll back up to it. Are you using, when you show a 2 hour, when you show one of your charts, it's a 120 minute chart. Are you showing that on a Globex 24 hour chart, or are you showing that on an intraday chart? In other words, are you, does your day have 12 candles, or does it have four candles?
It depends on the market,
okay,
for the most part. Okay. But, and occasionally, it depends on a couple other factors, like really, really quiet Globex movement. If it's persistent over a period of time, we may leave that Globex out, so we wouldn't have the 12 bars. I've talked about this before, that you can do it any way you want, but I have found that I'm more comfortable. You know, there's people who say, listen, the Globex is part of the market, and it is. I agree with that, and therefore you should have everything on your screen, because it's everything is there. You want to see everything. You want to see where there was resistance and support on Globex as well as on the pit session and so on. But I think when you go a little bit deeper, there are some issues with Globex in some of the markets when they are very quiet and, you know, a lot of time is passing and very, very little movement is happening. I tend to stay away from that in that particular market. So I hope that answers the question some. I do change it back and forth a little bit. It just kind of depends on market conditions, to be honest with you. If the Globex is nice and chunky and volatile and things are happening in it, I'm game. I will use that. So I hope that helps answer.
Did that cover it for you, Eb? Yeah, he said that was specifically the S&P. I'm asking on the two-hour charts you display.
Let's take a look at regular trading sessions. Let's see. Oh, I can answer that for him by just finding. I think we're using regular trading hours, a regular day session on the most recent ones that we've shown. There will be a time occasionally that you will see us use the Globex, but recently the recent ones have not included Globex. So I hope that's helpful.
Say that again.
The recent ones have not included Globex. The recent S&P.
Not included Globex.
Globex, okay. That's correct. Yeah, they were day session.
Okay. All right. He said, yep. All right, that takes care of it for him.
Okay.
Now, let me scroll back up here. Yesterday, you mentioned a rollover on crude coming.
Yes.
And when will that be?
I think that's, in fact, we've got Bert Schlichter from Daniels Trading, that's his whole name, with us here today. Bert, when does August crude roll into September? In about 3 days. Yeah, we all believe that it's time to roll now. If we make any further trades in crude or Williams Edge forecast, we're going to do it certainly in the September. That's correct, Bert, September? Okay.
Well, right now we're in August crude.
Yeah, so we're rolling over the weekend into September. We did have some concern yesterday that because the roll was starting to take place, that possibly the market would be abandoned and everybody would be in September. But it turns out that the roll is still about 3 days away, so there was still plenty of liquidity for the market to do its normal thing, you know. But, you know, we've all seen that when people leave the house, you know, all the liquidity leaves that market, it's not going to go to do what it normally would do. So, but it did. It completed everything, and now we're going to roll. So there you are.
Okay. All righty. Tim asked, does this strong bounce in oil indicate that it may still complete the biblical highs David spoke of? What is he looking for to keep his original belief for much higher prices?
Well, that's a great question, and I appreciate you asking it because I am really curious to see how crude oil handles itself from this point forward. I was saying this earlier on some other program I was on, that if this big decline that happened in crude is in fact a decline that is that subsequent to that decline, we do have that big move up, then the big move is going to be even bigger than what we originally thought. So it leaves crude in a very auspicious position right now, and we don't know right now. We're looking at crude. We just finished a trade in crude, obviously, the big move up from the other day to 103.50, but beyond that, we need to see a little more action. We're going to spend some time over the weekend and see if we can find the, you know, thin out the probabilities for what the next move is. I honestly do not know at this point. So, and remember, not knowing is a non-tortured place to be. It's when you think you should know, or when you want to trade but you know you don't know. All of that is where the torture comes in. If you don't know, you don't trade. It's just that simple. What a piece of magic. You just don't do anything. You wait until you do know something. You know, because there's different parts of us. One part wants to trade. One part wants to take a risk. One part wants to protect the capital. You know, make an agreement with yourself for once and for all, and stop fooling around with the markets. It's not a place to fool around. If you want to get ahead with this, I mean, if you want to have circus fun and just throw money at it, that's fine. I'm a little beyond that. I hope many of you are as well. You know, I'm looking to invest. I'm looking to, the same way, with the same care and concern that you might buy a home. That's the care and concern that we all want to give to these positions before we decide to commit capital, especially if you're committing capital with the idea of a larger move where you're looking for some, you know, a real return on that money. So if you don't know, you wait until you do. And so write that down somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
Brian says volume rolled in crude last evening. Don says that the crude volume is higher in September today, so everybody's in agreement that we should all be, you know, just purely based on volume, that it's time to be in the September crude.
Yeah, and that's a perfectly good thing to base it on. Also, the fact is that if you are doing anything that would require, you know, another 7 or 8 days for something to complete or something, you would then really have a real reason to be concerned that those numbers wouldn't be reached, because there isn't really the activity in that market. And, see, if you just take a pause here for a minute, you'll understand my position on Globex. So let's say it rolls. All of you would be saying to me, I don't want to trade in August crude anymore because there's no volume in it. And I would be saying to you, I don't want to trade in August crude anymore because there's no steam left in the market because people are all rolling into September. And all of that is the reason that I have trouble with Globex, is because it acts like a market often, not all the time, but it acts like a market it's the remnants of a roll. That's what Globex acts like, the remnants of a rolled market in many cases. And so if you say, well, why are you not using it? There you are, for the same reason that you don't want to trade August crude from now on, even though it goes on for another week, because it's the remnants of a market. That's why I avoid Globex in many cases. There you are. That's my show. Good night.
Good night. Good night, Irene.
I'm just showing off for Bert. I'm just throwing in all the one-liners right here so he gets some
good
entertainment.
Are you standing up or sitting down?
I'm not standing up right now, but Bert Schlichter can see me stand up, and he'll tell you. Watch the magic desk, Bert. Now, isn't that cool? Look at that. Now I'm standing up. Bert's laughing. And you can get this beautiful, you know, when you no longer feel like sitting down. You can raise it higher than this, but this is a fantastic thing. It's the best. This is better money than buying food to be able to stand while you're working. And all the food we had last night would be, this would be the better idea. Anyway. So I don't know if there's any other questions, but consider what I just said about the Globex.
One question on the dollar. Let's see.
It's good.
I'm liking the price action on the dollar for possible shorts Monday as it closes here. Do you have anything setting up for possible multi-day move down in the dollar or advance in the euro or pound?
The euro we're bearish on, although the best thing I can tell you right now, I kind of like his idea. Who asked this? What's the fellow's name?
This would be Ed T.
Okay. I like the idea.
Not confused with Ed W. Or
yeah,
Ed
and all
C,
the other Eds,
or,
right.
We've got quite a few Eds.
Right. Mr. Ed, the horse. Remember the show?
I remember.
There's Mr. Ed as well. And it was a talking horse. Can you mm-hmm. imagine how preposterous that was for a TV program? There's a horse that talks to you and says things. That was just fantastic. Those were the remnants of the acid years, people that took acid and then later had jobs, and they got into TV.
There's a late-night talk show where the guy has a talking horse, or he has a horse on stage with him, and a skeleton. I'm trying to think of the guy's name. Is it Kinnear? I don't know if that's him.
Okay.
He's a pretty funny guy. Somebody in the audience, what's the guy's name? Late night talk show host. He's got the skeleton, and he's also got the horse.
I don't know.
Tom says nonsense that Globex is not a market. Okay. That just came in right at the bottom. Did you just say that Globex was not a market?
No, I didn't say Globex is not a market. I said we don't utilize Globex because it acts often like the remnants of a market that has just rolled. It has very little volume and has very little steam in it and so on. I do agree that it is a market. It's part of the whole market. But I can tell you from experience that Globex does not act the same way unless it has real steam to it, which it does it from time to time. It doesn't act like a normal market, and I know what a normal market acts like. And because it doesn't act that way, I avoid it when making some of these forecasts. So that's all. If it works for you and you're able to do something with it, there's no problem with it. Many people utilize every bit of Globex every single day, even the really, really quiet periods and so on. I'm not trying to direct people what to do with their account or their, you know, methodology. I'm just saying, I'm being honest with you, you know. I'm not saying that I don't use Globex to start an argument with somebody. I just simply don't use it for reasons that I've identified. And again, it acts like a market that has been, in many cases, it acts like a market that has recently rolled, where the steam and the market pressure and all that is out of it. And so we leave it alone under those cases. It does often have good moves in it as well, and we can utilize that. So.
Craig Ferguson is the guy I was trying to think of the name, the late show with the late late show with Craig Ferguson.
Yeah.
And here comes where's his horse? There it is. There's the horse. This is the modern day equivalent of Mr. Ed the Talking Horse. They have a lot of fun on that show.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah. All righty. Let's see. I don't see any other questions in here.
Okay. Well, that's great. The dollar question, I wanted to go into that just a little bit more. There is something on the euro. We have to do a little work, but there is something on the euro that would possibly indicate we need one more day in the euro. So I think, basically, so into Sunday and maybe Monday, that if certain things happen, we would be very interested in actually going long the euro, and that would mean shorting the dollar, just as this fellow just said. So I'm not sure that I'm ready. I am sure that I'm not ready to short the dollar yet. I don't have a full setup or anything for it yet, but maybe he does on his own methodology. But I can tell you that there is the early signs in the euro for something that we're going to be putting out next week. If it confirms, then his trade would be correct. And you can, of course, you can trade the euro long or you can trade the dollar short. So there you are.
Okay. David, my daily soybean says bottom possibly in, not bottom picking. Also, weekly says bulls want a close above 1105, and monthly says a pullback to 1078.50. Still hold them.
Okay.
Would this be the soybean trade you referred to earlier?
You're talking to me that I took a trade, or that we are referring
no,
to a trade?
No, you were referring to a soybean trade that had gone awry.
I don't know. I'm not sure what trade he's referring to, but
No. You at the beginning of the show, you were talking about a soybean trade that had been held longer than it should have been held, and
a friend of I got you. I
don't know if that's who this is, but the question is, my daily soybean says bottom possibly in.
Okay.
Also, the weekly says the bulls want to close above 1105.
Okay.
And monthly says pull back to 1078.50. Still hold them.
Okay. So, and that's a question. We don't currently have a forecast.
I guess that's a question. There's just no question.
It's like still hold them, question mark.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. One of the things that I like to do to set these trades up is I like to have a period of a nearby period that something very likely is about to happen. You know, something that we believe is going to happen is about to happen. It's not just that we're waiting and waiting and waiting. So the reason I'm saying that is that I don't have that set up in soybeans just yet. Really, today is in many ways you know, the cigarette after the romance, if you know what I mean. Many, many important things happened yesterday in the markets, and a lot of energy got expelled, even though the S&P's had a great move today. Today is a little bit of a pause, even though we've had some decent moves, and we have to address all that. We haven't fully done it yet. I certainly don't have anything new on soybeans just yet. Fantastic market. We trade it all the time. If you come into Williams Edge, you can take a look at our history in soybeans. I think you'll be pleased with what you see. But at this moment, we did actually, I want to say, we did have a report we put out that talked about if the market got below 1063, which subsequently it got down to 1065. If it got below 1063, we would then likely have a trade, but they bounced from here and we're on the sidelines here. So I can't really assert yes or no to your question right now. Again, I only know things of high probability for short periods of time. I'm not really good at the generalities, you know, being too general about the market. I'm really looking, I have a standard, you know, for me that I need to see before I can take any action in the market, and I don't have that yet in the soybeans just now. So I'm sorry. I wish I could be a better help. But if I don't know, and or if you don't know, I would suggest that you wait until you know better and then trade it.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Very good. We did get the move from 86 to 84 on the beans. In fact, we got down to, what did we get to, 82.5. And on the S&P, it looks like on this little bracket trade that the 72 might be the one that triggers, possibly. I mean, we don't have a lot of time left in the market today. Well, we've still got, there's a reasonable amount of time. We might see the 72 to 75. That's 3 points of room to run, so room to grab your two. And then if it does swing the other way and we trigger at 65, then we've got all the way down to 60, so there's 5 points of room to run. So that's where we are. And David, it's time for you to turn into a pumpkin. So
I have to turn into
a pumpkin. Have a nice time.
Enjoy your
trip. And have a safe flight home. And we'll talk to you.
He said have a safe flight home.
Monday. And David, you have a great weekend.
Thank
Enjoy
you guys.
Yourself as well.
Thank you very much, Dwayne. Thanks for having me on, and thank you for the questions today. You guys have a wonderful weekend, and I'll see you on Monday. Thanks again.
All righty. I didn't know. bring this Friday, the 18th day of July, 2014, to a close as well. Unless you have an additional question that I can answer for you, I'll be happy to do that. Again, we have this bracket trade on the S&P. This will be our final trade alert of the week. We've had some really nice ones so far. And if we end up with a nice one here, that would be fantastic. Just see if the market has enough strength to get up to 72. And keep in mind, on the first push up, okay, it could, you know, the average swing, 3 to 5 points. And so from 68 to 75, that would be 7 points. And so this comes right at about that 3 to 5 point area where we potentially might, you know, feel that exhaustion. So you could get a, you could get this. And this is what you want to be careful of. You could get this, you know, maybe one tick, maybe two ticks. And the market needs a little breather, you know, just a little refresher. Gather some strength to get that final push up into the zone. I bring that up only because, you know, you have to have a hard stop. You got to know where you're going to place it. And then once you put it there, you got to make sure you don't move it. If you're going to move it, then there's no sense even putting it there. Now, there is 3 points of room to run. So you could bump this to 73, but then you're really getting into the exhaustion area. But if you, and if you bring it back to 71, see, we definitely want to avoid 71 because the high of this candle was 70.50. Okay, so we got to get beyond 71. So, you know, see how it acts. Maybe you've already gotten your points for the day, for the week. You're done. Maybe you were done last night off the alerts, and you're ready to go fishing or whatever it is you do. It is the weekend, so I do want to encourage you to, of course, spend some quality time with your family. I will see you all in church on Sunday. Thanks so much for tuning in. Wherever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this. There is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.